Hello and welcome to another episode of the Indie Founder Podcast. My name is Tiago, I'm a bootstrapper, and this is the podcast where we dive deep into the bootstrapping world and learn the best we can about how to bootstrap successful businesses. Today, to help us with that, I have as a guest Dmitru. He is an indie maker and he has bootstrapped his company, Screenshot One, to 20k MRR. In this interview, we dive deep into very important lessons regarding how to reduce churn and how he was able to find his ICP and then start growing his company. For the first year, his company grew to 5k MRR, but for the next 2 years, he was able to quadruple that growth. I tried to really dive deep and understand the actions that he took to shift his business and defeat his plateau. I hope that you'll be able to as well learn from Dmitru and use his lessons to grow your own business. Before we start, if you like this type of content, make sure to give it a review. If you are on Spotify, just scroll up and give it 5 stars. And of course, share it with your indie maker friends. A new episode of the Indie Founder Podcast is available every Monday. Now, without any further ado, here's Dmitru. Hello, Dmitru. Welcome to the Indie Founder Podcast.
Hi, Tiago. Thanks for having me.
So, Dmitru, you are the founder of screenshot1.com, which is a tool that renders screenshots in one simple API call instead of managing browser clusters and handling all the corner cases. This is your H1 from your website.
Yes, I think I heard that from somewhere.
Yes. So, my first question here is, how are your users using your platform? Like, give me a real case, like a use case of someone mm-hmm. that is using your platform. How are they using Screenshot mm-hmm. One?
It's funny. It's a lot of use cases. Like, some of them you probably would never heard about, or me. Like, I didn't know that this use cases could exist. But for example, yes, some simple use cases. Some people analyzing landing pages with AI, screenshotting, then finding some problems on the landing page and creating a list of potential leads. You know, they can send cold emails, let's say some design agency, yes?
Okay.
And they automate this process, and then, like, analyzing the screenshots, they have a list of websites with problems, extracting emails, and then they send cold emails like, let's improve your UI UX on your website. We found these problems, this and that, yes. Or, for example,
okay,
also simple and obvious, any directory needs screenshots for websites, right. Yes. More complex examples. Some of the cool use cases I like is one of my customers. They deploy a lot of websites, and then before deploying the website, which changed, they make a screenshot, then they deploy the website, and then they make a screenshot and check the difference, and if there is any problem, they automatically revert the changes, yes? Okay. This use case I like because it can fit, like, almost everybody. Also, onboarding, you know? For example, if you're in B2B space, often people sign up to a product with emails, and what some of my customers do, they show onboarding, like in the onboarding process, they show a screenshot of your website, and somehow it makes people feel more, I don't know, like you're at home, you know, like you're open. Yeah. The first page, like
more
you
welcoming.
Sign up. Yes, yes, yes. You sign up to the website. I also provide fonts of the website. So you can probably customize your software, like, better for your for the user who's signing up, yes. And some use cases I probably can't share because I don't know, like, if it's private, like, if I can share that information, yes. But these are the public use cases that are known and my customers share
like
them.
Yes, yeah, so. Yeah. So yes. I like this. I like this idea of automating cold emails and being
yes.
able to go to their website, taking a screenshot and say, hey, I was just at your website and it looks amazing, but there's a few things that we can improve, you know? And I got a few of those emails and it's interesting. That's definitely a
very interesting use case. Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah, 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 definitely.
Yes,
so
yes.
You just reached this weekend 20K MRR. Congratulations.
Yes.
That's amazing.
Thank you. Yes.
How long did it take to reach? this?
I launched my product on in 2022, May 29. Okay. Yeah, so it's like it's 3 years and 2 months together.
Okay, yes. Fully bootstrapped, no VC, no investors, right?
No,
building
no.
in public.
Yes, yes,
that's
yes.
incredible. Nothing. So, tell me something. Did you think this was possible before 3 years ago, 4 years ago? Do you think it was possible to create such a big company with this, you know, more than 200K ARR without any types of investments?
No, it's. I probably it's also probably documented somewhere on Twitter. I probably wrote it, I don't know, 3 years ago or something. Like, if I can't find 10 paying customers, I will probably go to work in 3-6 months, something like that. Yes, I don't remember like what was the my like what like date deadlines. Yes, but I remember that my goal was just to find one paying customer. And if I can, then 10 and maybe 100, yes. But it was when I reached 10K, it was for me fantastic, you know, like incredible, like wow, boom. And 20K is like okay, it's possible. And now I just don't know. Like, you know, it just
now the sky is the limit.
Yes and no, in the sense that it's probably a different topic to talk about, yes, but somehow I lost not motivation, but like money doesn't resonate much past.
I've been reading your blog and I saw that you're having a little bit of those thoughts, and I do want to speak about them.
Yes.
But before, tell me about how was like Screenshot when your first project, your first idea, or did you try many things before?
Yes, I tried many things before. Like if we take, for example, I don't know, 10 years, let's say, period from the moment I started coding, of course, I tried a lot of
stuff. Okay, yeah. Then you got definitely a lot of projects. But I know that you quit your job to focus only on your projects.
Yes. But
in
but
that period, was Screenshot One the only thing you focus, or you tried other little things?
I basically tried. I only had time to try one thing. Like Twitter analytics tool, if you remember this early 2021 or 2022, I don't remember the year. It was people were building Twitter tools, you know, scheduling and so on. Yeah. And I decided to go
the famous one from Tony Dean, right? The Black Magic, was it called?
Yes. Black Magic, I remember what else, like, mine
Tweet
was...
Hunter.
Yes. But I was building before them. Like it was. There were some other people. Yes, it was this period, and I was building something simple. Like I wanted to track who replies to me, how often do they reply to me, how often do I reply to somebody. Like, you know, to find some kind of math between relationships. I don't know, some nerdy stuff.
Okay.
And. But I realized that I didn't have skills to continue this project, because it required some... It's like, it was a project about UI, UX, it was analytics and charts, graphs, you know, and I was, like, for most of my career, I was an API developer. It's funny to tell that in retrospective, yes, but... So I decided to abandon this project, and then I had like a list of ideas, and like most of them were API products, you know, and it's like for me, just at that time there wasn't AI and so on. Like there was kind of, you know, I could pick probably, I had, I don't know, 5-10 ideas and so on, and I would say it was almost random, this one. I cannot, like, I would love to tell some beautiful story, you know, like, but it was something like, you know, oh, this one looks a little bit complex and interesting. Let's try to solve this one.
Yeah.
Yes, and then when I chose it and started to write a build, I found so many solutions that already existed, and it disappointed me, of course. You know, but then, like, okay, but then... No matter what idea from that list I was choosing, I already...
There is always competition, right?
Yes,
so how did you know that this was the one, I mean, that this was taking off? Like, what were the first signs that Screenshot One was taking off?
No, I didn't know. And till this day, you know, I'm not sure it's...
Now you know, yeah, right? Now, 20K MRR is already some validation, I would say.
Yes, it's validation, but in the sense that I don't know if it's like the work of my life, you know, in that sense, yes.
Of course. But you know, my question here is... do you believe that, because I do believe that the first projects, like, we never know what's going to work and what will not work, right?
100%, yes.
But once we find something, there's a kind of traction that is different, right?
Suddenly
people are more excited about this than other projects. So did you feel this?
Yes. It was some moment when... I cannot attribute it to the number, you know, probably, for example, let's say at 5K MRR, yes. But at some moment I realized, okay, like, it's a pretty boring tool, but business is needed because it has so, like, it depends on your use case, yes. If you need to screenshot, let's say, 100 websites, pretty simple, you can use, there's a lot of free tools you can build yourself and so on. If you need to screenshot only your website, some template, it's also easy to solve. But if you want to screenshot, like, random websites on the internet, with all these banners, ads, and so on, there's a lot of stuff you need to do, even when you have some solutions to that, you still need to solve a lot of problems. And I saw, like, real businesses, like, big names using my product. Actually, I still didn't tell probably stories about my customers, but I feel a little bit, you know, how to say it, like an imposter, in the sense that I thought if I put big names on my product, people won't believe me, you know, like it's impossible, somebody solo. But I saw this, and that was one of the things that gave me belief, probably, that okay, I can continue.
And so early on, you saw big names.
Not early on.
Well-known companies using your product. Is that
yes? Like after 2 years, maybe. I don't know if it's early on. Yes, but before that.
After 2 years. Okay.
Yes. But before that, I probably can find even in my chats with my friends. I was talking about Zendoo. I probably need to sell it. It's only 5K MRR. I am doing this for 2 years. It's impossible. I'm idiot. People launching these products and making 100K in 1 month. I need to do something like that.
That's so interesting. So it took you a while to get the momentum, was it?
Yes.
After 2 years, you were still at 5K MRR, is that it?
Yes, something like that. 5-8 maybe, I don't remember the number, need to check. But yes, it was, after 2 years, it was 5, I think, yes. It was 5-8, something like that, yes.
So what do you think was the problem? How did you fix that?
One of the problems was that one of the biggest problems was I didn't intentionally worked on marketing. Like I was shooting shots, you know, like trying different channels, paid ads, different platforms, social media, SEO, and I didn't understand who was my customer. It's funny because I already had a lot of customers. It was maybe 100, something like that, 100 plus. And what helped me is, I think that was the biggest driver in my growth, is realizing, like, who is my customer, like who are they actually, like real names, companies, like, you know, and why do they need this product? And from that I realized, okay, so they probably can find me on this channel and here. They need me because of X, Y, Z. They can pay me because they find that valuable. I just need to find more of them. And from that point, I started to change my copy, my website. Like, for example, my headline, if you see it, it's pretty simple, a Screenshot API for developers. And then the second, how do you call it? Subheadline, yes? It's almost pretty simple. It's like, and I started to talk in the language of these people who I know need it. Yes, and I started to build features only for them, and writing posts for them, like changing my marketing, my message, and like connecting more to these people. And okay, and then when I started to grow, like, it feels like that was one of the reasons. Like, it was
okay. Like, no, yeah, it makes total sense. The question is, how did you do that? How did you find like those customers? Because I can imagine that you have a lot of different customers from different walks of life with different use cases, right?
Yes.
What? Tell me, like, technically, how did you do it? Like, did you go through your database and saw like how they were using your tool?
Exactly.
Tell me that these details.
Yes. It didn't happen like in one moment. I just sat down, and analyzed everything, and boom, I realized it. No. First of all, I had a lot of chat messages, like support. I was talking a lot, and when I had almost every support interaction, it's my first or second question. I ask, what is your use case, by the way? It's like, why do you use my product and how did you find me? I ask it anyway, since I have this analytics, I have this referral and so on. But I anyway ask people, I want them to tell me the story. And what is your use case? Yes, well, this is was one thing. And when I had these 100 customers, I don't want to brag that I have a good memory, but I just remembered all of them. I was spending a lot of time thinking. When I realized I need to understand who is my customer, I was spending a lot of time thinking about them. And yes, actually checking what is their volume, what is their use case, checking their company website, like in what niche do they work. For example, I noticed that people who do marketing agencies, companies and so on, they tend to use my product more than people, let's say, who work in the law space, who like lawyers and some kind of this stuff. Yes, I still have this kind of customers for some use cases, but I noticed that also these customers in this space of marketing, for example, they paid me they didn't care almost about money in some sense.
Right. Product is in a way more valuable to the customers in the marketing space than in the law making space.
And there is probably more demand. I didn't know. It's still for me kind of a mystery to realize how this economic machine works and why there is in some niche there is a lot of demand and some less.
Yeah.
But for this use case of marketing, so I realized, okay, they can pay me. They're happy also to work with me. I enjoy working with them. And then I realized, okay, so I can write a little bit about that. Added use cases on my website. You can see there is in the footer, there is use cases, and you can see, there are probably five, six use cases related to marketing. Then I started to write blog posts. Then I also started to write customer stories. I was asking my customers from this niche to tell their stories. Yes. Like case studies. Yes, I don't want to call it case study because it was it's a little bit of junior work, not that high quality story, with all these numbers.
Right.
I just recently realized I need to take numbers, all metrics, and say this is my solution. You raised your revenue and so on by 20%, but it was just stories. How do you use my product?
Okay.
How does it help you and so on? So it was actually, basically, I would say it was analyzing my customer base and realizing who is my perfect ICP, ideal customer profile. And by that I mean somebody who is willing to pay, who see my product as who can get a lot of value from it. I enjoy also working with them because, some niches, for example, I don't know, some niches I might not like to work this, and some people, there is a lot of different people in different niches, I try to work with everybody, but I prefer, let's say, marketing,
Some you prefer more the others. It makes a lot of sense. Now, my question is, how do you, after identifying that ICP, you try to identify where they hang out, how you could reach to them, right?
How is
that process? How does one do that?
For me, it was a lot of time I was I spent on this kind of customer, let's say a real example, a small company, some agency who is automating, let's say, some Google Ads, something like that. They need screenshots for some reason, let's say. And they have one or two developers in their company, And they could spend this time on developing their screenshot API, or they can just Google for some solutions, find something,
Okay.
So that was how I like reverse engineered. But I also had Google traffic. I saw that people coming for me from Google, from Pacific posts. Mm-hmm. So I realized, so I will see that there will be some developers searching for my product. And they probably work in this kind of companies. So I could write my copy and text in the way that could resonate with them probably, you know. For example, it's just super naive and simple, yes, but as example to illustrate, yes. Use my API to save the time of your company to deploy the product. I pay me $17. I will solve all these corner cases, boring stuff, and you as a developer write some core business stuff and related to your business and so on. And it seems to be a good deal till this day. Like people pay me pretty small amount of money for the value they get, and some niches. Yeah. So
I like this. So you basically thought, okay, who are my target customers? Who is using? Okay, maybe developers. So let's put myself in their shoes and think, how if I was? Well, you were a developer. You are a developer.
Yes.
You were working as an API, right?
Yes.
So how would I look for such an API? And you thought, okay, I'll go on Google. So now Google is SEO. Is at the moment your main marketing source? Is that it?
I would say yes. It's one of the top. I would say yes. It's like one of the top channels. Yes.
So one thing that is important with Google is so actually, what works best for SEO? Is it Google like blog posts, like articles, or landing pages? Like what are the techniques? Like if someone was starting now SEO, what would you suggest them? Like do they do keyword research? Like what is this process? What worked for you?
Oh, it's a good question. I would say first of all, you need some simple mental model of how the search might work. Like you can read a lot on the Google official website. They post a lot about how it works. And my mental model was pretty simple. If I can satisfy user query and really answer to it in any possible way, it doesn't matter. But the goal is to make sure that the user doesn't return to Google and search again. Then Google probably will promote me more and more because there is some kind of traction. They see that my page answered this question.
Retention.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it means a lot of surprisingly interesting insight that some people don't understand. For example, in many posts I provide a free solution and my solution as an alternative to it. Yes, let's say you can use Puppeteer for screenshots, you can use Python, you can use C# and so on. Yes, like I tried to solve their problem. They came to me to solve problem how to screenshot websites in Python. Yes, and I want them this post to solve this problem, and I tried to help them. Like you can use this piece of code today. You have ChatGPT. Yes, but it wasn't. But before it wasn't. And second part of the post would be, let's say you can use my API and showing how it's different from just using Python and all the stuff, managing browsers and so on. Or for example, even if you write comparison guide, yes, the worst thing that you can do is to not backlink to your competitors. Why? Because if you, let's say, mention three of your competitors and people then returning to Google, like they read some of your competitors in your comparison guide and then they, I want to check this one, and they Google and they return to Google. They even might forget about you. I don't know, like it's like it might happen that they, or they just or indeed they found your competitor better than your solution would be. So if you have this kind of mental model that you need to satisfy and make sure they don't return to Google, that would be the first step for me, like to realize a little bit how it works, yes?
That's very interesting. So you think, I need to retain the user as much as possible.
Right? Yes,
so
yes.
That's the mentality. They get to my page, they need to stay.
Yes.
And how do you do that? Like, what are the techniques? Creating great content, right?
Making sure
that you understand what they're searching for.
Yes.
I want something in Python, so let's give them something in Python, right?
Yes, exactly.
What else?
And one of the things people like, there is a lot of stuff in SEO. I'm not an expert, but sometimes people tell, don't put a lot of links in your content, because if you put a lot of links, people will leave and page rank and so on. I think it doesn't matter, because if if they cannot find answer and they didn't link something, for example, in my post, they will go back and Google again, and Google might track it as like returning to the search and like losing, like probably my post doesn't answer. For example, I write about Puppeteer in my post, it's better to link it so people can just open it from your post and not returning to Google to search for Puppeteer and forget about your website, or just, you know, while they're searching, they might find some different stuff, for example, to solve their problem. And as I said, with competitors, yes, you backlink to everything, good content, satisfy, understand like this query. And a lot of stuff like page length, you know, count of words, images, not images. Do everything like as a mental model, yes, do everything you can do to satisfy the search intent. If you need for that images, put images. If you don't need images, don't put images. For example, some simple post with code snippet can work better than a lot like huge manual guide with explaining all the stuff and so on. For example, how to use proxy with Puppeteer. Puppeteer is a library in Node.js to render web screenshots, for example. You can write a huge guide about what is proxy, what is Puppeteer, or you can just put a piece of code, yes, and explain like in two lines, just do this and that and use this code, and that's it. And people will find it useful, and it will bubble up to the top. But except one other thing I noticed, that if you don't promote your website somehow, even on social media, people need to find it somehow, you know. This stuff about backlinks, I think it's true. You need backlinks and you need to work on that. But not every backlink, even, you know, for example, I have backlinks from Google Chrome Web Store. It's DR90, the follow backlink. It feels like pretty valuable. But I'm not so sure it's super valuable, because if it doesn't drive traffic to your website, it doesn't matter if you have, you know, like you have this link from old post from New York Times, I don't know, from some pretty popular website. But if it doesn't drive traffic to your website, it doesn't matter. So it's better to have a link from some popular website and having also traffic from the website.
You think it doesn't matter because of Google? So Google will not... because it's not bringing traffic to your website, Google will not kind of promote it? Or it doesn't matter because it's just not bringing traffic?
I would say that probably better to say that, like, I would prefer links that can bring me traffic over links that just poor metrics, you know, like in that sense. Okay.
So you don't believe in the whole domain authority and so like Ahrefs that allows you to grow your domain authority? That's not so relevant.
I would say that differently, that you can gain a lot of results without even having high DR, high domain rating, but probably it correlates, like there is some correlation, should exist, yes. But if you get a web link, but if you get let's say for my example, I never try to get backlinks from, for example, New York Times, because it's just some news website. It's not relevant to my niche. I don't know, like, I don't know if there is some transition of authority, some shift from authority from New York Times to my website. I don't know if I can get traffic from it. But my, you know, like my time investment, energy investment to get this kind of link will be pretty high. But for example, I got a backlink from Cloudflare. And that one feels pretty relevant. It's a high authority website. And, you know, it's like, it's also about development. And I got it on the page that leads to my website, and I probably get some traffic from it. So, like, this investment was valuable for me, you know, like
okay.
Founding.
So you're strategic with your backlinks. You think backlinks in your niche, backlinks that will bring you traffic.
Yes,
now the question is, how does one get a backlink from Cloudflare? What is the technique? Like, how do you get your backlinks? How do you get your relevant backlinks?
I can say that I got like pretty randomly. It was an opportunity. I just jumped in. Cloudflare was writing about products that were using their like who uses Cloudflare, yes, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I just submitted a form, and but it was not just, you know, I just, let's say, screenshot one and this is screenshot API. No, I tried to explain them that I can write about your product, about your platform. I can tell you a lot how I use Cloud. So I tried to be as useful as and valuable as possible to them, you know.
Yeah.
So, and they answered. They joined to me, and we had a call, and we talked about 30 minutes or 1 hour, something like that, about my product, about how I use Cloudflare, and so on. And then eventually they wrote actually about my website, published on their Twitter account, and so on.
Awesome.
And it was pretty valuable for me. And it's like, you know, it's not a partnership in no way. It's a partnership, yes, but still, like, some platform mentioning, some like solid platform mentioning your platform, it gives you a little bit more credibility. Yes.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
but
yeah. Totally. So at the moment, what is the number of visitors you are able to bring from Google every day?
I would say from every month. It's not a lot, actually, you know. It's not a lot, but it's pretty targeted. I think, yeah, it's from 5 to 8 thousand monthly visitors on Google.
Okay. Yeah, that's not a lot.
Not a lot, no.
Wow. But most of your customers come from there?
Most of them, yes. But
so there's a crazy conversion. Right.
From Google, it's much, much better from Google than from other channels. Let's say, for example, I just post something on Twitter about Screenshot Fund. People just click and see it,
yeah,
and like they don't sign up.
Because you also have 20,000 followers on Twitter, so you probably get some traffic from there too.
Yes,
right?
Yes. I think how Twitter helps me probably in another way. Probably because people recommend me on Twitter and because people mention me, then they search on Google. That's one of the hardest thing for me to understand, like, what is the real channel, yes? Like, but I know a lot of customers who didn't know that I am present on Twitter at all. They found me just later and, you know, like, followed me, wrote to me that, wow, you're so active on Twitter. We didn't know that, yes, and they found me through Google. But I also know somebody who found me on Google, but they, first time they heard about me on Twitter, you know? So I think it's helpful.
It's another touch point, right? So it allows to increase trust and therefore conversion.
Yes, trust and probably, like, branded search. For example, if I write a tweet, like, I did X with screenshot one without link, yes, and it worked this and that, and I built some cool feature, people often start search about screenshot one in Google. What is this, you know, like, what is the link, yes? And that, I think that can help, like, to signal Google, oh, this product, this website,
this
might be
relevant.
Interesting.
People are,
yes.
That's why sometimes when you release on or do a launch on Product Hunt, that also helps with Google. I've noticed that with PodSqueeze. When we release, and then we might not have even a good release, we are just not in top five or just, I don't know, position five or something, but it definitely triggers something in Google because our SEO grows after that.
Yes,
so there's something, there's some connection. So
some connection,
one thing that is, there's a, so for 2 years, that's incredible. For 2 years, you didn't grow much. And then you switch you start focusing more on what is your ICP.
Yeah.
And you thought, okay, they are there, let's go. And then, so basically 15K of your growth has happened in the last year.
Need to check,
right?
But maybe something like that.
Roughly,
need to
roughly.
Check. Maybe 12, yes, but yes. It's, yes, the most growth happened recently, yes. It's 100%, yes.
That's incredible. Now, I want to ask you about something else, something that I noticed that you spoke about on Twitter, which is churn, right?
Mm-hmm.
So your churn is around between 7 to 10%, but you're telling me that you don't care too much about this high churn because these are from customers that are not really your target users, right? So tell me about how you interpret your churn, how you split it, and how what has worked for you to reduce that churn.
Okay. Oh, it's a huge topic. I would say that the first most important thing in business is to get revenue, like, make that first dollar, yes. And the second most important thing is to reduce churn or increase the retention. It depends on how you think about it, yes. It's like, but I would say I want to get to First of all, 17% in the number of customers, yes, but much less in the number of revenue, and it helps a little bit.
Tell me, what's the difference between a revenue churn and customer churn?
Let's say in my example, yes. For example, from 7 to 10% of my customers churn. It's a lot. It's a huge churn. It's catastrophic. Yes, mm-hmm. but these are the customers on the cheapest plan. Let's say $17, yeah, something like that. Mm-hmm. So imagine 50 customers, $70. It's like almost $1,000 in revenue. Yes, for example. But having 10% churn in revenue, it would be $2,000 for me. Yes. So right. Why does it, like, what is the relation there, and like, what's the difference for me intuitively? Yes. So if, right, let's say if most of my revenue has been brought to me by customers on higher plans, then, and my revenue churn is small, I feel okay, because like I see that my revenue is growing and my target customers is okay. But this number of customers, it says to me, it tells me some story. Yes, but I know that it's a small number, because it's like they're on the cheapest plan, and I still want to attribute that somehow. I want to solve it somehow, but it's like kind of obsession, you know. It's not, because when I had churn, like, I started to collect churn reasons, yes. For example, like, is the product too expensive? Like, I had some kind of questionnaires, super simple. Mm-hmm. And I had reasons like low quality product, some bugs, issues, and so on. And once I fixed all that, most of my churn reasons now is like, my use case is not relevant, or I don't build a product anymore, something like that, yes. And there is nothing, nothing can do about this. If, for example, imagine a customer, like, let's say, some indie hacker who's trying to build something, and they need screenshots. They try to build, launch in 1 month, it doesn't work, and they abandon, yes. The only way to fix the churn, two ways, yes, probably, is to remove the cheapest plan, and they will probably go to my competitors, or to make sure my product, they cannot find my product, let's say, on Twitter. But also,
what's the point on that, right? Because then you're just losing on money, right? Even if they are churning, they are still paying you, right?
Yes. So it's probably, if I wanted to solve it like as a number, like some, you know, some like just shuffling, I probably can do something like prepaid credits. You just prepay credits, and you probably will be effectively removed from churn, and I will have only this like customer base. So I would say that about churn, yes, there are churn reasons. So if you build a huge topic, sorry, it's like my brain explodes.
Let me just interrupt you there, because I have a question. So you said that your revenue churn. So what's your revenue churn?
Revenue churn probably something like 5%, from 3 to 5%, something like that. Yes,
3 to 5%.
It still feels high. Yes,
that's very interesting. Let me just recap that to make sure I understand, because mm-hmm. this makes a lot of sense. So what you're saying is that, sure, your subscriber churn might be high.
Yes,
but as long as your revenue churn is low, your business is still healthy, because it means that the ones that are actually paying you.
Yes, right? Yes,
paying you the amount you need to grow, those are churning less. The only churn exists in the like these customers that you're saying that they are not really your target customers. They are trying it out, but maybe their product dies or something.
Yes.
That's cool. Almost, and I'm also curious. So you said that you did this exit survey, and there were a lot of bugs, and you fixed them. Did that affect this churn? Like, how much were you able to reduce the churn?
It's actually it's hard to say, because, like, you know, because I did a lot of changes, you know. Of course, I also worked on marketing, you know, like I tried new marketing channels. I worked on SEO, improving my old posts, writing new posts. So, and I was fixing, I saw drop in the churn when I was working on it actively, but then in the churn again, and then I analyzed, okay, who's churning, like, what are the customers, right. And they're not just funny metric, it's like most of them people with Gmail account, like without work email. So probably somebody who is starting, but they don't even have a company product name or something like that. Yes. And people on the cheapest plans. Yes, it was for me. And then I realized, okay, so, but is my ICP churning? Yes. Are they satisfied? Are they happy? That's what matters for me the most.
Mm.
And
is my ICP churning? That's the question one should ask, right?
Yes. So, and so that's my focus. And I still work on the background. I have ideas and I work on something like, let's say, it's just really complex to rebuild in my product now, to do something like prepaid credits. Mm-hmm. I can do, let's say, for example, I can do something like pay me $30 for these credits. And you don't need to subscribe. And this way, I probably can reduce churn and also increase revenue, because I will get a little bit more revenue, but people don't subscribe. So it's like killing two rabbits from one shot, you know?
Yeah, no.
It's like, so yes. So
but you are alone. Like, yeah. You are alone doing this, right? So do you have a team? Do you like? I know that you have a few contractors.
Yes.
Mostly alone, right?
Yes. I worked with brilliant designer and still have been working with a brilliant software engineer. They like, I needed help with my marketing website. I wanted to redesign it, clean up, and so on. And I just didn't have time for this. I was focused on my product API dashboard most of the time. Yes, and I needed somebody to help me with my marketing site, and I still need some help, probably less, but we redesigned it completely, improved a lot of stuff, a lot of problems, and so on. So yes. And
the interesting thing here is that you have a wife, you have kids, you have a personal life, right? And
yes.
And then you're building this, and you're doing everything, you know, like any bootstrapper, coding, marketing, doing all of this. So how do you prioritize your tasks? How do you prioritize what to work, what is valuable for you to work on? What is the model that other makers should follow?
I would like to sound smart there, but I'm not.
just be honest, man. Just tell us.
I will
be
honest. Yes. So. It's pretty simple. If I have a support ticket, somebody asks me something, my customer, it's like, it's the top priority. Doesn't matter what I do, I just stop everything and I help my customers, yes? Mm. So it's pretty easy to prioritize. I wake up, I send my kids to school, kindergartens and so on. Then I drink a cup of coffee, read a book. And then if I have a support ticket, I just do it. If not, that's what I started to do recently. I really try to think like forward, let's say for a year or maybe 2 years, what I want to do, yes? And just now I'm trying to kind of building some kind of vision, what I want, like in what direction I want to work, yes? And from that, building some plan of my job. I just first day when I took day off, it was yesterday, I just didn't work and realized, okay, I probably need... It's in Israel, it's the first day, working day is Sunday. Mm. So it's like my working week started yesterday. But I decided not to work. Yes, and I decided, you know, I probably need to take this one day week just for some strategic planning, some like what I want to do with my life, is my business and so on. And that will be probably, that's how I will work on that probably. So currently I have, let's say, if you say how I prioritize my tasks, it's probably three parameters. It's like,
mm-hmm.
if I have support ticket, if not, then I have two ways to do my job. I do something mm-hmm. fun, but something that would help my customers. Let's say I can build some feature, write some piece of code that I wanted to write, or...
How do you know what will help your customers?
I have a huge backlog like of feature requests, but I don't implement all of them. You know, for example, somebody like I already had four requests for my product is an API product, but people often ask me to upload files, CSV file, or like with URLs and get screenshots back, for example, yes, and it was in my backlog. And now I feel, okay, it's probably the time because people ask about it and so on. I probably need to do it. People ask about it often, and I find it fun now, yes.
Mm.
And another way to, when I work, I just check my metrics, let's say number of visitors, conversion rate, churn rate, and so on. And I, okay, let's try to work this week on this number. Let's improve the number of visitors. Let's improve the number of, for example, month ago, I was working a little bit on fixing my SEO. Let's update all posts. Yeah. Let's check keywords and so on. Yeah, so let's improve this number, then this number.
Mm-hmm. What is in your dashboard? What are the main metrics you look every day?
Yes, I would say once a month I check like all the numbers that I possibly can have, like, and just I usually write some kind of retrospective, and part of it I publish on Twitter. It's like my kind of build on public. Before that I was publishing all numbers, but I realized, okay, people only care about your MRR.
Yeah.
only your competitors care about your all numbers.
The rest of the numbers.
Yes. So I realized, but I check all numbers, okay, my churn and so on. I see, okay, they're probably norm, like within the range. And then, but from day to day, I probably check 2-3 numbers. It's like, I check the number of visitors, you know. I check the number of errors, error rate, because it's an API product embedded for me. If I have some problems, I have uptime monitors, I will be notified about that. And of course, I check revenue. I don't know. I disabled all notifications and so on, but still once a day I open this thing and check it. I don't know. It's like kind of habit.
Okay. Interesting. So fixing support tickets, then... features, then looking to a metric and say, okay, let's try to fix this. Let's try to help it. I like that. And now you're thinking, okay, you're getting to this phase, and that's the last part also of our conversation, but I do want to speak about it, which is you're loaded, man. You have too much money, and now money means nothing.
Yes,
I mean, not necessarily like this, but I guess you're getting to this phase of, okay, I reached my monetary goals.
Yes.
What else? Like, what else is there? What can I do? Shall I sell it? Shall I keep building it? Maybe the motivation is not the same. So be honest here and tell us what is in your mind now.
Oh, it's a lot of stuff. Like, because it's like my current topic of the week, of the month, probably. Yes, like what's to do next? And so my almost like financial goals that I wanted to achieve, I achieved. I beat my salary. I am okay now. Like I have huge expenses, like 5K, but I'm okay now with my profit minus taxes. So it's okay now. And I probably
that's something, sorry to interrupt, that's something interesting that I forgot to ask. Because from this 20K, a lot of people, they say, hey, here is my MRR, I'm making 20K, but then they spend 25K in ads. So that's actually important.
You're
saying that from your 20K, 5K are expenses.
Yes.
So you are able to take 15K to yourself, but of course...
Before taxes. Yes.
Yeah.
But then taxes, yeah, and then it depends. I still need to get like an average tax, but I think it can be something like 12, maybe 11 or 10K, something like in this range. Yes, something like that.
Okay.
But it's enough, like, to for.
Of course. Yeah.
Like, of course.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
I mean, it depends.
It depends on the... I mean, there's people that spend much more than that, but I guess for the normal average person, that's...
Man, I don't... Like, really, except I want to buy a home, yes, actually. Someday, yes, and it's impossible almost. It's like $1 million you need for that. And except this, like, I don't know what to buy with this money. Like, if you give me now, let's say $1 million, just give me, I will probably buy a home. If you give me 2 millions, I will probably invest this other million, because I don't know how to spend them, you know. It's like, you probably also have everything, like iPhone, everything you wanted to have, I don't know, MacBook, having time with kids, traveling sometimes. I don't know, like, it's... And this one of the problems, you know, it's... it's pretty privileged position to be, and I'm lucky. I'm super grateful for it. It's like... I'm super happy. Yes. So
no, but I think it's something interesting that you're talking about, because you know, some founders, they do get there and they want to know, what's there more after getting your goals, your monetary goals, like what is next? What is your drive? What is your motivation?
Yes, because, yes.
Believe it or not, everyone believes it, that like money is, even though it's not our main drive, that's not why we are entrepreneurs. And I know that you also spoke about this, that there's this ego, that you want to build things yourself. So that's part of
yes,
it.
Yes, yes. Also part of it, yes.
Yeah, but a big part is, you know, winning the game. And winning the game is making enough money to live out of it, right?
Yes.
So how are you going to solve this? How are you going to find your new motivation? Any ideas?
I will try a few things. First of all, one of the reasons I love Twitter, yes, I ask a lot of questions and people give a lot of feedback. It doesn't mean that I listen to everybody. Yes, sorry if it offends somebody. Yes, but I read almost every reply. Yes, and some people give crazy cool ideas, some ideas, and like I have. Before I get into depression, you know, I have a lot of things to try. Let's say, first of all, getting back to sports, doing my hobbies, yes, like health, all this stuff. It's like spending time with my family, of course, traveling. I almost booked a trip and so on. And this is like some casual lifestyle stuff. Yes, it doesn't answer the question about like what drives you, why you wake up every morning. And
it does answer that a little bit, right?
Yes.
Be with family, yes. To travel, that's always good things.
Yes.
I guess
yes.
It doesn't answer the question of professionally what you want to do.
Yes.
Or
yes,
do you want to do something? Maybe you just want to retire. It's also possible.
Retire.
No. Sell the company, you know, sell it and retire and sail to the sunset.
It's a good question. It's another topic to talk. I got some offers, but let's say. So, what I think about, actually, I see that most of my happiness comes from actually just helping people, like your customers, and working with people, contractors, for example, and talking to people. It feels for me that, like, chasing the number was good, and it's cool, and business is good, and being cool is great, and so on, building stuff, but I recently realized, probably, the goal is not all this magic stuff, but probably the goal is people, and all these numbers and all this stuff is just means to have access to some people and having time with them, you know. For example, I really love talk to, like, I enjoy talking to you, but we didn't talk, sorry. It's like, it's only me talking. You're...
No, we have a conversation.
Yes, but I would love to talk about, actually. We still talk because I see reactions, yes, on also questions. But what I want to say that I want to talk with people. I want to have time with people. And that probably
will
teach.
Be... You want to be a mentor. You want to help the new generation of indie hackers.
It's a hard one. I don't feel I have enough credibility to do that. Yes, but I do want to help people. Yes, you think?
I mean, from this conversation, I think you gave a lot of valuable insights. So, and that's the thing that I don't like too much about Twitter these days, is that the only thing that you see is people sharing their huge MRRs or being controversial or doing this shit posting, and in the end. The only thing I want to know is how to fix my fucking churn. Like, that's I want to know, right? What I want to know is how to get customers, how SEO works.
Yes,
you know, I don't want to see the others making millions and showing off that, like, I don't... I mean, sure, I'm happy for them, but I don't really care in the end. Like, I want to know... And these kind of things, this type of conversation we had, I think it's really important.
Yes,
so,
yes. It's one of the things...
you have
things...
a lot of knowledge.
Thank you. It's one of the things... like it's a bit, you know, like attention in me. You can try to optimize for attention, for algorithm, or you can decide, like, I realized that there are much more people who want to become an entrepreneur than people who launched the product, than people who had some customers, and then people who need to solve retention problems. So when I write content about retention charm, it's like for 10 people, you know. It's like, but still, I think I find it interesting. I think we can talk about charm for 1 hour, 2 hours. I would love to talk about it. Yes, but it's super interesting topic, and that's one of the things I will continue doing. I think I will continue sharing trying to extract these lessons that helped me and probably will help others. But what I wanted to say that I like spending time with people, and so probably I will focus on making my customers happy, making me happy also, yes, my family and so on, and that's probably it, you know. I don't know, like
maybe I think that makes sense. That makes total sense. You know? Sometimes understanding what makes you happy, that's the hard thing, right? Like, but I think trying to be happy, you know, keep your family and your customers happy, keep your wife happy. It's always important.
Happy wife, happy family, happy business.
Exactly. Happy wife, happy life. Yeah.
Yes. If you have happy wife, everything is good.
Mitro, it was really nice talking with you. Thank you so much for all this knowledge you shared in the Indie Founder podcast. Tell us again where people can find you. I know that you have a website. What is it called?
Yes, it's called Mitro. It's my name, mitrocarson.com. Yes.
Okay. Where you share a bit of your thoughts.
Yes.
You have a blog, you have a newsletter. Right?
Before I post on Twitter, I usually post there. And there I post usually, I don't care about, you know, for example, I can write about politics or economy or about this stuff on my personal website. But on Twitter, I probably won't write about that. Like people, like, it's probably because in the bubble I am in, people are not interested in this stuff, you know. It's like, so, but on my personal website, I write about everything, like, I don't care. So it's probably the best way to find me. And also just email me, like, my public email is mitro@screenshot1.com. You can write and ask me anything. Mm-hmm. So,
and then your Twitter handle?
Yes, Twitter handle, also Twitter, yes. Twitter,
Mitro?
The same, yes. The same as my name.
Awesome. I will also link it in the show notes of this episode.
Thank you.
Dmitry, thank you so much.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
If you like this episode, let me recommend to you two other episodes from this podcast that I believe will be very interesting for you. The first one is episode 340 with Elston. He's the founder of Tiny Host, as well a bootstrap company with tremendous success. We touch on how scaling was hard for him and how he's able to overcome that. And as well, he shares alternative marketing techniques that I believe you love and you will be able to use as well in your own business. And the other is episode 334 with Rob Walling. He is the host of the podcast Startups for the Rest of Us. He's also a bootstrapper and investor. He runs his own fund called Tiny Seed, where he invests in bootstrapped companies. And we focus on a lot of the lessons that he shares on his book, which for me is one of the best books around entrepreneurship, called The SaaS Playbook. And one particular lesson that I really love is about pricing, how changing pricing can change your business. So make sure to listen to these two episodes next. Next Monday, there's another episode of the Indie Founder Podcast. Until then, have a great week.